Right. Kenny or Richard. Kenny, you got a comment or comment? I'm sure you.
Okay, there we go. I unmuted. Just a few comments, and I can be very brief. Nostalgia always has its place. I mean, they're still making movies about World War II, and I sure wish I could do or experience some of the things I experienced when I was 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. But here we are today. So my recommendation is go on your phone and download TikTok and watch it for an hour or two or three. Don't get completely absorbed, but understand that's where contemporary society is if they're under 35.
Right.
It's not salacious. It's not pornographic. It's just people showing off. That's all it is. With their dogs or their motorcycles or their makeup or their flips or their dancing. And it actually stands for a very good part. I would say Americana, but it isn't because it's around the world. A very good part of enthusiasm of people enjoying what they're doing and, getting excited or showing off, which is positive. They're not moping and doping, groping and saying, "Hey, the world's coming to an end next week." You know, they're just saying, "Hey, watch what I can do with my skateboard." Very positive aspect of life. But watch that. And as everybody here knows what I mean when I say grok it, get to understand what it is. And that's the market. So rather than reminiscing or talking about the dire state of the Pacifica stations, I'd like to ask Michael two questions. In your experience, what seems to be more commonly effective or important in radio programming, terrestrial or whatever, the content or the format? In other words, like WNYC Radio Lab has tremendous production values. I've listened to broadcasts there about the most uninteresting topics because it's presented so well. And the same thing holds true in the movie. A well-produced movie could be about a guy losing his dog, and a rotten movie about World War II is a flop because it's not well-produced. So is it content or container, like how it's produced or the quality of it? That's the first question. I know you want to have a mix of both, but which way would you think is more effective? And second is, should we go broadcast or silo? In other words, right now, the Pacifica Network, for the most part, the average listener is over 75, and they're always on the left, and they're, social justice warriors, or at least progressives, and there's nothing there. There used to be. There's nothing there for people in the middle of the road or right-wing fanatics. WBAI used to have the Enema Lady. They, outrageous programming. They used to have Casper Weinberger, and I think it was KPFA, right-wing, hard-nosed militant. But we don't have any diversity like that. We just have left, 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 and left of left for the most part. I'm sure there's exceptions, but for the most part, that's it. The most mild broadcaster we have on KPFK is Tom Hartman, and he's left of center. So it's a question of, can you go with silo broadcasting like Car Talk, Bicycles, How to Raise Your Dog, opera, and little silos, little niche, narrow marketing? Or is it better to say, let's put on programming that appeals to the broader audience apart from their demographics and apart from their political positioning, and say, like, good place to go for vacation, what are the interesting restaurants in L.A., where's a good place to shop in suits, daily things, interesting in life, whatever you would do successfully to broaden the audience. Because it seems like some of our rivals like KPCC have done that, and they have much, twice the market share that KPFK has in Los Angeles. So the two questions are, what's more important, content or format?
Okay, can I stop you right there?
The second question is...
No, I need it one at a time, though. I'll forget the second one if I don't address the first one, okay? So, yeah. They're both great questions. They're both good questions. I think content always wins the day. I don't think people really give a damn about the technology, per se, as long as it's accessible. I don't think they sit there and go, wow, the quality of this isn't quite up to snuff. If it's good enough, fine. But it's the content that's going to keep people tuning in. And then once they tune in, that's going to keep them there. All right. So content is the big challenge. Now in terms of your second question.
Yes, silo or broadcasting? In other words, narrowcasting or broadcasting?
I think you
narrowcast to 100 different markets, and maybe that's going to get you more listeners than go and try to broadcast.
I think we live in a silo market world, you know. I think we live in the niche programming. I think people look for very narrowly. We live in a narrow casting world. They're looking for what appeals to them and to them alone. I think stations that do broad approach to programming have experienced a diminution and erosion of their numbers dramatically over the years. That's not to say that they still don't hold on to a somewhat impressive QM or AQH or whatever. But we just live in a world. It's a me world. And now with the, you know, all of the options that exist in the audio arena, you can find what it is that appeals directly to you. And that's where you're going to stay. People don't move off that. That's the problem. People don't give a damn about all that other stuff anymore. They should. They should, because we don't live in a terribly well-educated world anymore, because people, you know, the old debate about all the right watched Fox News and all the left watched CNN. And that's created a huge division, and we've got a problem because of that, because we should have been watching both to have a better and more well-rounded sense of what, you know, what the feud is about. But I don't know if that addresses your second question or not.
Yeah, that's you're right on the money. And just one added thing is that people might not listen to it all the time if it's, how to grow corn, and that's my interest, but they'll come back to it.
Yeah.
They may go away. They may do this, that. They'll come back. Okay. Thank you very much, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Good questions, really.
Richard, do you want to jump in with a comment, Richard? Richard Dawson? You just have to unmute. And, I just want to ask you, Richard, are you there?
Yeah, no, I don't really have a comment, but I'm certainly enjoying listening.
Okay, thank you. This is something, you know, Kenny brings that up because one thing I've always been impressed with when I watch TikTok is how creative some of the TikTok 1 minute videos are. I mean, they're extraordinary sometimes to watch. And often I've thought, well, here's a whole realm that we have zero, I'm talking about Pacifica, I'm talking about radio in general, all these different media forms to me have to be embraced and sort of brought into the mix. And some sort of synthesis, some sort of creative process in interacting with them. But I wanted to show you this list because, you know, you talk about podcasting. So here you've got the Joe Rogan Experience as the most listened to podcast. After that, The Daily. And then you have This American Life as number 4. And then Serial's down here is number 9, which of course, you know, comes out of, This American Life, our glasses shop in Chicago. And, again, we know from the statistics of people listening to podcasts, while everybody's going podcast bananas right now, it still is about 10%, or so of the gross listenership, even though analog radio has immediately decline, and you're right about that. I always been getting these arguments with people because they just do not, for example, the amount of people actually owning radios among Generation Z folks has just declined to ridiculously low numbers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just curious calm down here, and again, thank you for your time. If you can stay a little longer, we'd like that. But, you know, get over these questions. And I think, Bruce, you had raised your hand earlier. What do you think a system like Pacifica should do? Let's say if you were in charge, Michael, of Pacifica, what would you think would be the kind of directions you'd want to explore, and at the same time, how would you want to deal with the new technologies? What do you think a creative way to deal with the new technologies that hasn't been thought of yet?
Oh boy, there you go. I put my wizard hat on here. I think Ken had a good point. He's talking about how BAI or Pacifica leans so hardcore left at the exclusion of the middle ground and even the right, that maybe it has to take a look at that and wonder where that's going to lead in terms of audience size and see what it might need to do to embrace a larger segment of the population in terms of what to do with the technology, how to utilize the technology. Well, I'm no expert at that. I mean, I don't really even engage in much of the new technology. And from what I've heard so far from like Otis and other people here, that BAI does a good job with the existing technology. I suspect you, Jim, and others here might be even more qualified than I am to talk about how do you utilize the new technology, as long as you're out there and you're represented, and again, what you're doing has enough of a reach to bring you a meaningful enough number of listeners, then you're on the right track. I guess what you're doing needs to be looked at from that perspective. Is it performing the way you want it to perform? And if it's not performing the way you want it to perform, then you better start doing something else, because you're wasting your time and your money if it's really not getting you what you want it to get. Then again, too, you probably need to evaluate what is it you want to get, and is that feasible? You know, I mean, Jim, you were talking about how the cumes and the numbers over the last 10 years are clearly downsizing or going down. Well, so the big question is, how do you keep them from going down to the point where you're so fractionalized that you're going to have difficulties raising contributions and donations to sustain your operation. So I don't know.
Well, yeah, no. Well, that's precisely the point. The amount of people have gone down so dramatically that the whole foundation is engulfed in internal warfare over what direction to go. And there's one faction that basically wants to check out essentially the constitution or bylaws of the foundation and take us in a direction which would essentially be, I guess, form-wise NPR. I don't necessarily agree it's like NPR light, but that's what some interpret it as. And then others, of course, have different opinions about how to solve the problem. Now, the idea of community radio, see, the other thing in Pacifica that's, to me, always ignored is that we have in our mission statement a dedication to the arts. We have a dedication to music. We have a dedication to performance. We have a dedication to drama. And as far as I'm concerned, we've essentially moved away and minimized that for the past 30 to 40 years. And as you well know, radio drama, in particular in the United States, took a big hit during the big NPR fiasco in the 1980s when they nearly went belly up. They cut radio drama, but we do not have the same tradition in our radio broadcasting as certainly the BBC does or European radio has in terms of radio drama, for all sorts of reasons. And so the, you know, so that's another thing that has to be thought of. How do we integrate and work with art, with the arts? And, you know, being in New York, one thing I could say about BAI is I tend to think we're isolated from the artistic community in New York City in general. And the issue of moving into the kind of things that Ken was raising, well, actually, Car Talk, that NPR TV show, they actually approached Pacifica before they went on Boston television. And some idiot in Pacifica decided to turn them down long ago, which I consider one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of in the past 50 years of Pacifica history. One of the dumbest things they ever did was turn down car radio. And so, you know, I'm really happy that we were able to have you come on and join us. I'd love to have you come on another time and talk with us and think out loud about this. There's a lot of other people who weren't here today, but if I wanted to first just ask if anybody wanted to get in with another comment or question or opinion.
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing.
Let him go. Go on, Otis.
Just that we are the technology committee, but one of the things that I've noticed, you know, in our governance, particularly and among people, is people talk about the technology and what are we going to do that's digital and how are we going to do the technology and what's the technology going to be. And I have a great idea for the technology. And, you know, Michael said it, and I just want to make it bigger. It's not about the technology. The technology is easy. It's about radio, basically, is a linear medium telling a story. And when you do that well, people will listen. Yes, well, you know, I think they're running an old Great Gildersleeve or some show that I used to listen to when I was a kid. And my kids were about, you know, 10. And I said, oh, you got to listen to this. And it was 30 seconds. They could not grasp it. What we really need to focus on is what we really do, which is radio. And I mean, I say radio, meaning the things that make radio. The technology is simply a way of delivering the significant thing, which is the radio. And that's what Michael was saying. When you started there, there was all this technology stuff, and you just moved away from it to what was important. You know, it's like, it's not about the technology. The technology is easy. What it really is about, basically, it's about story. All of those podcasts you had listed were podcasts that were heavy in story, particularly This American Life. But I listened to Snap Judgment and, I can't think of The Reveal on NPR, which are two excellent shows, both of which are heavily diverse. And this is the kind of thing that we should be doing, and we're not.
Yeah, we had Garrison Keillor there for a while, and he's gone, and he had a real substantial following. And was very, very popular. Even young people had heard of Garrison Keillor, but I don't see, you know, it's not there anymore. It's gone. I had the good fortune of being friends with Norman Corwin, going back to the 70s. And, you know, I would hear what he would say about the status of public broadcasting and about radio in general. And there was always a sadness in his voice when he would think back at a time when the word meant so much, when people would really listen, and when there was art. When art was allowed to exist, the programmers had not trotted on it. We're in another age. I agree with Otis. I don't think technology is any kind of magic bullet at all. I think it's like, you know, the hourglass put on its side. You know, what does Pacifica Radio want? And once it determines what it wants, it has to determine what its target audience wants in return. And I think, you know, that's just the simple formula. I think two expectations have to be adjusted. I don't think we live in an age when there's 100 million digital audio options out there that huge, massive audiences are going to be possible anymore. I think that age is over unless something really catches on fire. And maybe that's the other thing too. Audience research, which you've done a lot of, what, you know, what is out there that's on fire right now? And then do you want to do it? You know, I mean, do you want to go all hip hop, you know, to have a substantial or a larger audience? It's what you want, you know, what a specific radio want to do. And if it decides it wants to do this, then, you know, go down with the ship. If you feel it's that's important, to achieve that.
Well, I years ago, I went to an event where Christopher Lydon was there.
Oh yeah, another friend.
And Christopher, just for the record here, Christopher was the original host of The Connection, which was produced at WBUR in Boston. And he now, I guess, does the open source. And Christopher, I didn't realize that Christopher was actually in on the invention of the term podcast. When he was talking to the guy who, Christopher said, like, the two of them were bullshitting away one day, and then all of a sudden at MIT, and they come up with the term podcast. But one of the things I mentioned to Christopher was, I would love it if any Pacifica station could turn itself around and sort of get into the question of what Otis raises. How do you create good content? What are the elements of good content? Because he's right. Technology, you know, that's, you know, you can... the form is not the most important thing. It's really the gravitas of the content that's the most important thing. And how do you create an atmosphere to create good content? And that would be the last thing I'd like to ask you to, you know, sort of pick your brain today on. What are the elements of how do you do that? How do you nurture good content in radio?
Well, first of all, I have to understand, what is good content? You know, I mean, what is good content? What defines good content? You can't go to good content until you know who you want to reach and what your goal is in terms of cume and audience size. And then once you've determined that and you know who you're programming to, then you consider content. Then you consider what good content is. I don't think there's any other way you can do it. There's a lot of good content out there. There's a lot of good content that nobody's listening to.
I just want to say that one of the theories behind Pacifica, one of the theories behind the Pacifica programming and the idea of community radio was that what would be interesting was people's passion. So you had people who had particular kinds of passion who would get on the air and attract, you know, audiences. But at that time, all we had was radio. But that, rather than trying to figure out what people wanted, it was what did particular people care about. And I think there was an implicit assumption that that would reflect at least a segment of the population. So it was a slightly differently or radically different way of approaching what your programming was. That's the history kind of community radio.
Has the mission statement of Pacifica Radio become blurred? Is it blurred?
No, it says you have choral societies and you have to be sustaining. And what it basically says is you will hear things not commonly heard on other media. Mm-hmm. That's really what it says. It doesn't say anything about your political position, you know, this that's changed, it suddenly has to be the left. Because when it was first done, Cap Weinberger had a show, the John Birch Society had a show. It was not just left wing, it was a much broader thing.
Right.
And that is because how it worked was somebody would come in and say, I really have this burning passion to do something about this. And you would take a chance and see, you know, could it be good radio? And of course, some of it was good radio. The Fire Sign Theater was pretty good radio. Bob Fass was extremely good radio. If you think about radio as an immediate medium, when Bob was doing his show, when it was, you know, the hot night show in New York, all kinds of things would happen. Anyway.
Did anyone answer about, was George Lincoln Rockwell ever interviewed on before he was assassinated?
Yeah,
I wanted to ask one or two questions.
And a communist.
Yeah. What's that? What's that?
We had a communist commentary on KPFK and a libertarian.
Oh, I hope so. I hope they're.
We had.
Yeah. That's what one thing I'd say about this. Some of you qualify the Pacifica as left and then far left. I'm sorry. I don't. I don't think I hear a lot of far left. I mean, other than, you know, what substitutes for the left, which is a lot of the identity stuff, which frankly, I think is, you could look at it as an outcome of market segmentation as well. But I'll leave that alone. I miss Garrison Keillor immensely. I thought, and if you think about his show, it was, you know, it was always stories and skits. Of course he threatened and did retire several times before this, you know, this scandal that supposedly, you know, was forced him to go silent. But I wonder if his replacement, which was Alive from Here with an upcoming bluegrass, is that still on Live from Here with, and it's wonderful radio, frankly. It's live, you know, neo folk. And why isn't Pacifica doing something like that? Let me finish because the question I have for this technology committee is, why aren't the stations, why don't we have one terrestrial signal and then, you know, three or four HD stations that are rebroadcasting some material? Obviously you have archives, but also broadcasting continual streams of programming from the rest of the network. The best of whatever, and we're using, you know, we're sort of continuing to produce obviously quality programming where we can and share it across the network. And, you know, Otis said, the technology in some ways, he didn't say take care of itself, but it's easy. And if we have a consistently, you know, four channels from each station with that, you know, moniker, but a lot of it might be the Pacifica network and the network, brand. That also is, you know, transferred to YouTube or some other video format. Doesn't have to be YouTube. You know, why isn't that our sort of plan to force, you know, to see this as being? I mean, I know we're stepping over into programming, but we obviously have been talking about programming quite a bit, and you can't escape it. So, shouldn't that be one of our, you know, what we're driving at in terms of a recommendation at some point in the future?
I sort agree.
Taking the quality of the best quality from across the network, liberally distributing it outside its originating markets, and by extension, my God, the pull on talent when they know that their stuff could, you know, could be, wide nation and world distribution. You know, you wouldn't lose a Car Guys, show, which frankly was a disaster, Jim. If that's true, and I believe you, that also was a great, you know, a great hit, just like Prairie Home Companion. But think about Prairie Home Companion. It's almost like vaudeville with, you know, and radio skits and music and interviews and everything else, a true variety show.
Yeah, no, just before you come on, Sue, I've argued for over 20 years with others that part of the solution to the problems with each station is precisely to do that, whether it be through the internet or HD, to create several channels and also where new shows can come on and be created. New talent can come on and be created because, as you know, and this gets back to what Otis was raising and sort of what Michael was talking about, FM radio in the 60s was the internet, was the digital revolution. We now have a situation where we have all these options that didn't exist and we don't take advantage of them. Anyway, Sue, you want to, as a last word, you want to come on in this? You have something to say, Sue?
Roy has the overnight show at KPFK, and he started out a lot like Bob Fest, and then, but I think he still plays Garrison sometimes. Anyway, he makes money, but they're trying to fire him. But local talent, especially in New York City, there must be tons of local talent from all over the world that could produce, but I don't think they're taking advantage of that. And even in Houston and L.A. is a port, and there's all kinds of and people keep asking for local news. That's one thing they keep harping on, and local news doesn't make any money, so maybe that's why they fired our guy at KPFK. But anyway, local talent. You shut up.
Got your cat, local talent. Yeah.
Lost my thought. Local talent. Yeah, we should take the best from each of the stations and consider putting them on all the other stations, except maybe WPFW because of it's different. Anyway, we have to be careful with that, but we should, spread the best stuff all around.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Bruce, your last comments before we let you go here. I actually said that 15 minutes ago, but we wanted to keep you on a little bit longer. What are your last comments, Michael?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know if I can sum anything up. I think everybody has some, I think everybody has some really good insights here. It might have been good to have, corporate or your president or your general manager listening to some of this stuff, but I think it's a real conundrum, a real puzzle to determine how to hold on to audience in this day and age, and to keep what audiences happy that you do have, all I can do is wish you the best, and wish WBAI and Pacifica Radio, certainly a group of broadcasters I've long admired, because of the individuality and the courage that has been evident on Pacifica Radio for 70 years. And I think that still has a value to listeners. I don't think that should be thrown away or relegated to fads, if you will, or something new just for the sake of numbers. All I think any broadcaster could do right now is to do what you're doing. You're probing, you're looking, you're analyzing, you're trying to find a way in this crazy, confusing media extravaganza that exists right now. Things are changing, and they're changing rapidly, and they're changing dramatically, and some stations and mediums are going to be left behind. I don't really know what the best way to approach it is, other than to be clear on what it is you're doing, what it is you want, and asking yourselves what we're doing. Is it what our intended audience is happy with? Because if they're not, they have endless options, endless places to go. And you don't want them to leave you. You want them to stay. In fact, wouldn't it be great if you could increase the size of those people who appreciate your programming and what you're doing?
Right. Bruce, you wanted to jump in one last comment, right? Bruce?
Actually, I wanted to say two things and then ask a question, which unfortunately is a long answer. But I think what we need to – what Pacifica does is it gives you something you can't hear anywhere else. And there's a lot of stuff that you can't hear anywhere else.
And I think we made the mistake of not asking that question, what can't I hear anywhere else? Like a program about student loans. Now that's going to get young people interested. WPFW should do a program called Hill Staffers. You know, the young people who are working in congressional offices and in the offices in Washington DC. I bet you that'd be dynamite. The other big problem is, we don't have young sounding voices on the radio. Young people like to listen to young people's voices. You could tell if it's an old person. No offense, because I'm 66, so I can say it. But, you know, they'll listen to somebody who's got a voice that sounds like a 22-year-old saying the same thing as somebody who sounds like they're 60, and they'll listen to it. And, you know, the solution to that is kind of mandate co-hosts on the radio show so that there is a young sounding voice on the radio. And then my question is, how do you create good radio, but how do you teach it? How do you teach good radio to new programmers? That's for Michael.
Well, you know, something that's been discouraging for me, having taught some form of radio for 40 years, is that when I first started teaching on the college level, teaching radio, it seemed the majority of my students were very interested in going into radio, different areas of radio. Yeah, granted, they all saw themselves as future radio stars, but there were those who aspired to be news reporters and even copywriters. As years have gone by, I don't find now I have any students interested in a career in radio. And that's been the case for the last several years. I used to have a sense 20, 25 years ago that I had some connection with students, because I myself, when I was young, I wanted to go into radio and I wanted to make my mark and be on the air and produce and whatnot. But it's not an awareness, of young people. And I don't think it's just because Boston College is principally a liberal arts college. I taught at several colleges and I find recently, I say recent, last 5 years, the interest in radio as a career field is non-existent. It's just non-existent. And why is that? Because they're not listening to radio. Now, so I always try to tell them that it's still a marvelous place, that you can learn an awful lot about many things by going to work in radio, but they find that the opportunities in radio have dwindled because radio has dwindled. And so I find myself, maybe that's why I shifted gears to teaching history, you know, and the sociology of broadcasting and the sociology of radio, because the pragmatic or the practical end of teaching radio, there's just no apparent market for it anymore. That's not where kids want to go. That's not what they're thinking about. That's not what they're listening to.
Right. It's a very interesting question. And, many years ago when we had to lay off a whole bunch of people in New York, the general manager of WBI and myself went up to the person who teaches audio at Columbia Journalism School, and we offered him the ability to essentially program the morning strip show. We said, we turn it over to you. And he sat there like stunned for about a minute. And he said, well, that's a pretty good offer, Jim, but I don't know if I could get everybody to enough students to help staff it. Because precisely that issue, because even in the J schools, they were basically training them in multimedia. And the other thing that I noticed, getting back to how you took your scholarly interests into sociology and the history of it, was maybe 6 or 7 years ago at the American Historical Association, I go and listen, and all of a sudden I discover these panels on radio history. And I said, who the hell is doing this? So I went down and listened to it, and it sort of blew my mind. I said, how many guys like that are out here doing this? It was when, you know, Professor Douglas's great work on the history of radio, the woman that teaches up in Michigan or Wisconsin. But, you know, as you said a few minutes ago, we're trying to probe, we're trying to understand, and we're trying to think out loud about where to go. And I want to thank you, Michael, so much. We'd love to have you come on again. I hope we didn't completely disrupt your Saturday afternoon here.
Not at all.
But it was really great to have you join us and talk with us. We did record it. We're going to share it with other people. And I want to thank you so much. And really, I mean that sincerely. We'd love to have you come in a couple of months and pick your brain again.
What's left of it?
Yeah, what's left of it? And what's your next book? You're just now concentrating on fiction, right?
Yeah. I've gone over to the dark side. I publish books of short stories. About 18 years ago, I had a memoir published by Algonquin Books, and that kind of shifted my axis a little bit in my orientation. So my telemetry has gone over in the fiction area. I do very, very little study or work or publications. And as I said, the Norman Corwin book 10 years ago was really my last foray into writing about radio. And I figured that was kind of a wonderful way to end my time writing about radio was to have collaborated with Norman Corwin. It's actually the last book he was directly involved in.
Any potential radio dramas in those short stories?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot that could be adapted to radio plays. Certain, you know, in them, it's something that I haven't thought about, but I think so.
Well, it'd be interesting at some point to get your ideas about what you think were the best radio plays ever written. At another
time. Ooh, that's a good one. But we all have our biases, I think. If we're familiar at all with the golden days or the golden age of radio, you know, there's some favorites. I force my students to listen to something, that I know they'll find of some interest. And you know, and that's the Orson Welles famous Invasion from Mars. But
Roy plays those.
Roy
on KPFK overnight plays those.
No, does he?
Yes.
He
has an old radio segment.
Oh, does he? I'll have to check him out.
Yeah, once a month.
He does, Sue could elaborate. He does the show. It's quite unusual. He has the largest, I guess he has the largest overnight audience.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, because he's had a strip show on for how many years has he had basically a 4 to 5 hour segment?
Oh gosh. He's been with A&K for 40 years.
Wow.
I don't know. 30 years maybe.
30. Well, I know one time I was looking at the Arbert Nielsen's and Arbitrons and sort of jumped right out at me that this guy had the largest audience of any of the shows. And it was between 12 and 5 in the morning in Los Angeles. So
Between 12 and 6 now.
12 and 6. All right. Well, anyway. Well, listen, again, Michael, I want to thank you so much. It was terrific having you today. And again, we extend an invitation to have you down the road. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.